Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda ki jai, Namacharya Srida Haridas Thakur ki jai, Premsa Goho Shri Krishna Te Danya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Avadvip Dham ki jai, Ganga Mahe ki jai, Jamuna Mahe ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakti Vinda ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Guru.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Savai Ratnam Tuda Drishtva Admaishwarya Tishayanam Tanadriya Tagni Hotriyam Sabilasha Sahayataha Savai Ratnam Tada Drishtva Padmai Rashyai Atishayanam Tanadri Yat Nihotrayam Shabilasa Sahayaha Savai Ratnam Tada Drishtva Admaishwarya Tishayanam Tanadriyai Tagni Hotriyam Sabilasa Sahayaha sa
hi
kartavijarjuna.
Vai
indeed.
Ratnam.
The great source of wealth.
To
indeed.
Tat
the kamadeno in the possession of Jamadagni.
Dristva
by observing.
Atmaishraya
his own personal opulence.
Atishayanam
which was exceeding.
Tat
that.
Na
not.
Adityata
appreciated very much.
Agnihotyam
in that cow,
which was useful for executing the Agnihotra
sacrifice.
So Abhilasa
became desirous.
Sahayaha
with his own men.
Translation.
Kartir Virajun thought that Jamadagni was more powerful and wealthy than himself because of possessing a jewel in the form of the Kamadema. Therefore he and his own men, the Haihayas, were not very much appreciative of Jamadagni's reception. On the contrary, they wanted to possess that Kamadena, which was useful for the execution of the Agnihotra sacrifice. Purport by His Divine Grace, C.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jamadagni was more powerful than Kartavirajuna because of performing the Agnihotra Yajna with clarified butter received from the Kamadena. Not everyone can be expected to possess such a cow. Nonetheless, an ordinary man may possess an ordinary cow, give protection to this animal, take sufficient milk from it, and engage the milk to produce butter and clarified ghee, especially for performing the Agnihotra Yajna. This is possible for everyone. Thus we find in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna advises Gorakshya, the protection of cows. This is essential, because if cows are cared for properly, they will surely supply sufficient milk. We have practical experience in America that our various ISKCON farms, we are giving proper protection to the cows and receiving more milk, more than enough milk. In other farms, the cows do not deliver as much milk as in our farms, because our cows know very well that we are not going to kill them. They are happy, and we give them milk. Therefore, this instruction given by Lord Krishna, Gaudakshya, is extremely meaningful. The whole world must learn from Krishna how to live happily without scarcity, simply by producing food grains and giving protection to the cows. Those who belong to the third level of human society, namely the mercantile people, must keep land for producing food grains and giving protection to cows. This is the injunction of Bhagavad Gita. In the matter of protecting the cows, the meat eaters will protest. But in answer to them, we may say that since Krishna gives stress to the cows, those who are inclined to eat meat may eat the flesh of unimportant but they should not touch the life of the cows, for this is destructive to the spiritual advancement of human society. Translation again, please repeat. Kartavirajuna thought that Jamadagni was more powerful and wealthy than himself because of possessing a jewel in the form of the Kamadena. Therefore he and his own men,
the Haihayas,
were not very much appreciative
of
Jamadagni's reception.
On the contrary,
they wanted to possess that Kamadena, which was useful for the execution of the Agnihotra sacrifice. Being envious of the good fortune of Janardhana to his possessing Kamadeva, who is lacking in appreciation of the great fortune before him in the form of the association of a sage. You can learn something about envy from this episode. Envy means ill will, resentment, dissatisfaction due to another person's advantage, possession, position, whatever. But the fallacy is, the false ego imagines that by usurping another person's gift, you can attain the happiness that you imagine that they derive from their gifts. And in that attitude, you fail to recognize and access your own gifts. And this is one of the beautiful aspects of our ashram, which is pretty much synonymous with farm life, which Srila Prabhupada is describing in his purport. But in Varnashram, the elders recognize and encourage in children their God-given gifts, abilities, and talents. And they direct that and encourage that. And then the child learns to be dependent on Krishna. And Krishna has given us everything we need to achieve the purpose and goal of life. Conversely, the consumer society of the industrial world conveys a different message, which is one of the reasons why Srila Prabhupada labeled the modern educational institution the slaughterhouse of knowledge. Because its inherent message is, you don't have inherently what you need to succeed. You have to come to us, learn from us, be programmed by us, serve us, take shelter of us, to receive your sustenance from us. And this spoils the natural gifts and potential of the individual. So, Kartavir Arjuna, although he was received in gracious hospitality by Janardhana, he could not appreciate it. He could not appreciate his kindness, his gifts, or his own fortune in being in the presence of a sage, because he was envious. And this lack of appreciation is another passive form of envy, which will inevitably express itself and reveal itself. Thus, the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Acharyas emphasize more than any other virtue that of humility. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went so far as to teach Sanatana Goswami that there's really no other virtue that can attract Krishna. How can the all-attractive, all-powerful, all-opulent possessor and personification of all six opulences become attracted to a tiny, insignificant jiva? By his own free will, he's attracted by humility. Because it is the companion of devotion, which attracts Krishna's grace. And devotees who keep themselves decorated with this jewel, humility, are protected from the hideous, poisonous contamination of envy by Krishna's grace, which they attract into their lives by their service attitude. And bhakti, being the supreme potency of Godhead, destroys envy at the root, because the two of them cannot exist. They cannot coexist in the same heart. And therefore, we have that wonderful example of, which we've repeated so many times, but it's so precious, that after the killing of Agasura, who was such a huge demon, and then his soul went up into the sky, where Krishna met him and had a conversation with him. And he told that little jiva, who was 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair, but had inhabited such a huge body that he could swallow all the cowherd boys. And considering that there was 900,000 cows just in the possession of Nanda Maharaj, you can imagine how many cowherd boys there were. He could swallow them all, including Krishna, even though he had such a gigantic form extending for miles, with a mouth reaching up to the sky, inviting all the cowherd boys to come in, like a huge cavern. Krishna told him, there wasn't enough room for you and me inside that body. One of us had to go, and I prefer to be you. It's a humorous aspect of Krishna's dealings, but it's very instructive. Love of Krishna cannot coexist in the same heart with envy. Inevitably, one will displace the other, and Krishna prefers that our humility attract his grace, which dispels and disperses and displaces that root of all anarthas, envy. And what does this say about our lives if we're envious of others? We know that the possessions don't bestow happiness. So it's really envy of another person's existence. And it stems from envy of Krishna. So any issues that we imagine we have with other jivas, it's not really between us and them. It's really between us and Krishna. So, as we see in the unfolding of this pastime, from this root of envy will inevitably blaze forth violence, which is not a mere superficial display, but the topic of violence permeates the text of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which are addressing the subtle mentality of violating another's purpose, function, and essence, which is to be Krishna conscious. Anything that inhibits or impedes actively or passively another person's development growth in Krishna consciousness is violence of a subtle nature. And Krishna sometimes advocates violence of a gross nature, as in his inciting Arjuna to kill the Kauravas' army. But that was for their benefit, for
because their envy was inhibiting their advancement and being killed in the presence of Krishna by the Lord's own servants was beneficial for their spiritual progress. Those who are killed by the Lord or his agents are relieved of that burden of envy, and thus Krishna empowered Arjuna with sufficient might that although the Pandavas' army was vastly inferior in terms of military might, they were victorious because of Krishna's empowerment. After the battle, that mission of relieving the world of that particular element of its burden, Krishna withdrew that potency. And Arjuna being entrusted by Krishna to escort the last survivors after the massacre of Prabhas to Hastinapur was overpowered by what Srila Prabhupada calls the group of infidel cowherd men. So we should not be proud, as Srila Prabhupada says, of Bhagavad Purvas, because whatever abilities or gifts or talents or whatever Krishna gives us, it's all a gift. It's not ours. It's not ours to take credit for. So sometimes people think, well, better we don't receive blessings because then we'll get proud. Well, it should work the other way. But if you acknowledge that whatever you have is a gift, a blessing, it should make you more humble with proper vision. So this topic of violence is sometimes confusing. Sadhus are generally very peaceful, very gentle, very kind-hearted. How is it that their Lord is inciting Arjuna to warfare when Arjuna was giving all good arguments for being peaceful and non-violent and forgiving? The ultimate in non-violence is surrender to Krishna and fulfilling his will. There was a wonderful sermon on non-violence delivered by Bhishma in the course of Maharaj Yudhisthira asking him a series of questions. And Yudhisthira asked, what is the greatest virtue which makes one lovable by everyone? Bhishma replied that it's friendliness, kindness towards others. And then he told a story to illustrate his point. He said there used to be one powerful sage, an ascetic named Jajali, who was a very, very powerful, very accomplished in the mystic yoga arts. His subtle body could travel anywhere in the universe while his physical body remained immersed in the water. And he had been fasting for such a long time without moving, he became very powerful. And because he was immovable like a post, two Kalinga birds made their nest in his matted locks of hair. And they lived there very peacefully, without any anxiety, in the shelter of the sage, who never moved in honor of his guests, who would be disturbed as they were making their nest, and the Mataji bird was laying her eggs, which in time hatched, and the little birds felt very protected and peaceful in their nest in the sage's hair. So they grew up, and gradually they left the nest
first for a few hours, then a day, then for a few days.
And then gradually they just went off on their own. And when they were away for months at a time, the sage understood, well, they're adults now. They've relocated, so I can start moving about again. And desiring, of course, he was motivated in this tapasya because he wanted to attain the merit of asceticism. And when his vow was complete and the birds had grown up and left, he became very proud and began praising himself for his incomparable merit. When an unseen source pronounced in a voice reverberating from the sky that there is one simple merchant who is more fortunate and virtuous than you. He lives in Varanasi and his name is Tuladhar. And even though he is so virtuous and meritorious, even he does not have the right to boast as you have done. And then the voice stopped speaking. And Jajali was very insulted and very angry. And out of envy alone, he decided, I will go to Varanasi and meet this Tuladhar. So he walked to Varanasi. And as he was walking through the marketplace, one very humble, very simple Vaishya stood up and said, I knew that you were coming. How can I serve you? And he was astonished. Are you Tuladhar? Yes. And he was astonished. Well, how did you have the vision and the knowledge to recognize me? And Tuladhar began to explain that the highest morality is friendliness, compassion, caring, and loving relationships, which will naturally minimize violence. Because of practicing such virtue as kindness towards others, I have been awarded such vision by which I can see everyone equally, which has inspired me to be detached, free from hankering. And because of spiritual vision, I am conversant with the subtleties of morality. And from this perception, I can understand that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas are really an inferior form of spiritual practice. And a superior spiritual path is that of renunciation and nonviolence. And then Tuladhar, the merchant who sold fruits and vegetables in the marketplace, explained that even the noble profession, farming, is not worthy of brahmanas because it is also violent. When you're tilling the ground, you're harming and injuring and killing so many living entities. So the worthy occupation of brahmanas is the path of yoga, ultimately bhakti. So Jajali was he issued a challenge that if everybody followed the path that you're recommending, then the living entities of this planet would be deprived of their sustenance if there was no farmers. And Tuladhar said, no. If the humans became so highly righteous that they sincerely practiced friendship, kindness, loving relationships with others, the earth, who is another cow, another mother of us all, she would be so delighted, so pleased, so overflowing with affection that she would yield all our needs without even being cultivated. And simultaneously, the devas would award their own blessings. And then he told Jitha, look up in the sky. He looked up and he saw those two birds. And he said, you should welcome them because they have affection for you as a father. So therefore, show them your hospitality. That was Bhishmadev's answer to Maharaj Yudhisthira when questioned, what is the highest virtue to which a human can attain? But it's not possible to mechanically or artificially develop such qualities. They're aspects of bhakti. Srila Prabhupada said, bhakti is the supreme queen. And in her presence, there are many maidservants who embody all the other virtues. But their root is bhakti. When Krishna withdrew his fighting potency from Arjuna, it didn't mean his mission was completed in this world. That one aspect was of ridding the earth of the Kauravas. But when Krishna was torn between his duty as the king of Dwarka and the calling of love in his heart to return to the Brijavasis, who at that time were actually in Dwarka after their meeting at Siddhashram, but it wasn't the same as Vrindavan. So Krishna was torn. And he was thinking, it's time to conclude my Prakata Lila. But Krishna has an interesting and significant affection for his Prakata Lila, his pastimes in this material world, which is twofold. One is with the dark backdrop of material nature, Krishna's pastimes appear even more luminous than they do in the spiritual sky, where the backdrop is self-effulgent. That contrast highlights certain aspects of his teachings and lessons. The other, which is more significant in terms of what we're discussing, is in his prakatlila, meaning his pastimes in this material world, there's a special flavor of unique sweetness in his bestowing mercy by means of his devotees upon sadhakas, siddhas, and demons all alike. So Krishna was feeling the conflict between the call of duty and the yearning of his heart, which was loving relationships with his devotees. And in Dwarka at that time, when the Brijavasis were present, the sentiments and exchanges of love between host and guest, meaning the Dwarkavasis, the Jadus, and the guests, the Brijavasis, was so sweet and so loving that it could melt even stone and make even wood cry. What to speak
of these stone-like hearts of those who hear the loving dealings between Vaishnavas. And therefore, devotee association is an essential aspect of chanting the holy name. Because if the heart is steel-framed, it will not feel a taste for the chanting of the holy name. Because if the heart is steel-framed, if it's cold, envious, jealous, doesn't like to see the welfare of others, wants their gifts for ourselves, Krishna will not be attracted to that kind of heart. He will not be attracted to that kind of chanting. And then we won't feel, we won't experience, we won't taste the sweetness in His holy name, because the name, as the Lord, is independent. He's not duty-bound to come when we utter the syllables of His name, mechanically. He's attracted by the sweetness of affection. So, eventually, the longing for the sweetness of the relationships of the devotees between themselves and the devotees with himself in Braj became overwhelming, and he did not desire to remain in Dwarka any longer. So meanwhile, you know, Uddhava was seeing, you know, signs of misfortune, quarrelsome interactions amongst the jagras, and he was wondering how is this possible in Krishna's presence. And Krishna said, well, the curse of the sages upon those arrogant jagra princes is fructifying, so we should go to Prabhas to perform sacrifice to counteract the ill effects of that curse. And Uddhava understood that that doesn't make any sense. What is going to Prabhas to perform a sacrifice going to achieve that Krishna's own presence here in Dwarka cannot award? So Uddhava, being wise, could detect that Krishna was about to wind up his pastimes. And he made his one humble but very fervent appeal. Take me with you. Don't leave me behind. And Krishna said, no. I'm leaving you behind, because you've witnessed in numerous visits to Braj the ecstasy of love and separation, the enhanced ecstasy of love in union, and the continual cycle in which Krishna is forever enhancing the devotee's love. So I said, you have to stay in this world to teach that in Bhadrik Ashram, which means, you know, from there to the world. So Uddhava was devastated. And Arjuna in Taruka, he also left behind, because they had further missions, aspects of Krishna's Leela to be completed after his return to the spiritual world, after his closing the curtain on his Prakat Leela. Understanding that he had service gave Arjuna a reason for continuing to live, because he was very inclined to just give up his life numerous times, but Taruka kept reminding him, no, you have a mission, you have service to Krishna, an aspect of his Leela that is to be yet fulfilled through you. You cannot give up your life. And then he remembered. Otherwise he was just wandering like a haunted orphan around Dwarka. But Taruka and Uddhava kept reminding him, you have another mission to escort the survivors to safety in Hastinapur. So Arjuna, he assembled them all on the shoreline, just inland of the island of Dwarka. And Arjuna was feeling such separation from Krishna that life was unbearable for him. But the instructions he'd heard on the battlefield began resonating with more significance, more meaning. And he understood, he realized at this time, that he had to take shelter of those instructions even more than before, because that was the only thing that would sustain him in the absence of his friend, Krishna. So the words resonated in his heart, that I am not manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. To them, I am covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya. And Arjuna resolved, I will go through that curtain and again be in the presence of my friend who allowed me to lie in the same bed with him and joke with him and be his intimate companion, who served us as chariot driver, as watchman, as messenger, as counselor, as friend, as everything. I will go through that curtain and be with him again. He resolved. But how to enter? Then another verse resounded with even more significance. Manmana bhavana bhakta yaditiman namaskaru namivaishasi satyante pratijne priyosime. My friend, I promise you, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me, and then by that means you will come to me. I promise, because you're my very dear friend. And he kept hearing, resonating with his heart, I promise you this, because you're my very dear friend. And that gave him strength and determination and encouragement and focus. And when he had the queens and the remaining jagus assembled on the shoreline, then there was loud rumblings from the sky, violent tremors in the earth, inauspicious omens everywhere, lightning crisscrossed across the backdrop of ominous clouds. And as the Dwarkavasis looked at the last time towards their home, that vast city slipped down beneath the boiling sea waters as their tears merged with the rain and their cries of lamentation merged with the thunder and the rumbling, as if the earth was casting off some last great burden. And they just looked in silence and disbelief. So they took shelter of Krishna's empowered representative, Arjuna, who led the caravan towards Hastinapur. And on the way, a group of infidel cowherd men mocking Arjuna, taunting him, grabbing the queens who, as they were screaming and crying, were dragged away by these cowherd men. And Arjuna found he had not even sufficient strength to string his bow. And when he called his other weapons, they didn't come as they did before. Desiring to invoke the divine missiles by their incantations, he forgot the mantras. And these factors made those cowherd men just mock him all the more as they dragged away the queens, and Arjuna found himself paralyzed, impotent, and the empowerment that he previously knew had gone with Krishna. And the worst part was when he reached Hastinapur, the news had preceded him. Everybody knew. Arjuna has been defeated by a band of cowherd men. The reason is that through Arjuna, Krishna wanted to emphasize and impart his final lesson, which applies to all of us. that however opulent or powerful we may be, whatever we achieve in this world, time strips it all away. And our only real fortune is the humility which leads us to the shelter of Krishna, his instructions, and his devotees. So, with that same verse, which is the ultimate conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, to always remember Krishna. Not mechanically, but out of affection. Because when we're actually humble, and the qualities of the soul express themselves through a softened and malleable, pliable heart, that attracts Krishna. So, to remember Krishna means you must be humble, you must be devoted, and then Krishna will reciprocate your feelings and sentiments. With that conviction, that by remembering Krishna, you will come to me, I promise, because you are my very dear friend. He understood. It's time to go. So the Pandavas, without looking back, they left. And as they began ascending those steep and rugged trails of the Himalayas, in the higher elevations where the air was thin and vegetation ceased to grow, and there is obviously no longer any physical sustenance for them in this world, at a certain point, as he was contemplating more deeply and entering more tangibly into the substance of Krishna's words, the rough, stony path beneath his feet transmuted into marble walkway inlaid with jewels. And he looked up at those towering peaks of the Himalayas and he saw these splendid domes of Dwarka in its full splendor. And for just an instant, before his eyes flooded with tears and his heart overflowed with joy, he saw in one window, inside one of those palaces in this vast expanse of Dwarka, his friend, his eyes full of love, his words and gestures full of compassion, welcoming him. Remember, I told you, I promised you, you will come to me because you are my very dear friend. Do you remember? So, when the great king of Orissa, which at that time was a very large portion of India, Pataparudra, was being refused time and time again to have darshan of Mahaprabhu. And King Indrajumna was as powerful as Indra. Tremendous opulence, power, potency, reputation, fame, and glory. But he was so humble. He would not do anything without the consent of his guru, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and the devotees. Feeling compassion for his plight, they advised him, just dress as a mendicant, Vaishnava mendicant. And when Mahaprabhu falls down in ecstasy, he is just oblivious to the external world, just recite one verse. And that verse so touched the heart of the Lord that he neglected all his previous conditions of not meeting with royalty, because the verse so much touched his own inner emotions and the essence of his mission. Oh my Lord, the nectar of your words and the descriptions of your pastimes is the life and soul devotees in this world. These narrations are transmitted by exalted personalities. By hearing them, one attains all good fortune. hearing them relieves all sinful reaction. Those who spread the message of Godhead are certainly the most beneficent welfare workers. This verse is the essence of spiritual life and good fortune. The nectar of Krishna's words, the descriptions of his pastimes. Therefore, if we want to do good for ourselves and for others, we have to encourage, assist, inspire, and serve one another in hearing the wonderful pastimes and merciful instructions of the Lord. And chanting his holy name. Not mechanically, but with a sincere longing and desire to develop a true sense of humility. And in a humble state of mind, one can truly act as the ever-well-wisher and friend of all living entities, because that humility will attract Krishna to reveal his love within our hearts and express his kindness through our words, dealings, and service. And he says, there's no one so dear, nor will there ever be anyone so dear to me as one who spreads this message. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Service attitude. wanting to please the Lord and his servants by our own service attitude. Thinking oneself in and of himself very insignificant, but very proud of his masters, the Vaishnavas, Guru, Krishna. And in that consciousness, seeking, yearning, striving to please the servants of Krishna, knowing that there's nothing so satisfying to Guru than seeing our service attitude towards the devotees. Well, first of all, you can't preach until and unless you have realization. So in the neophyte stage, what we call preaching is just connecting others with Guru and Krishna. We don't have the realization and the sambandhagyan to understand the proper relationship with things in terms of how to present Krishna consciousness properly in every situation. So we just present Srila Prabhupada's teachings. It's not that those who are envious are necessarily completely neglected, although they should be if they persist in their spirit of envy. But Srila Prabhupada has such a full spectrum, broad program for saving the world that for those who are just too envious to hear the glories in the name of Krishna, give them prasadam. he advocated mass prasadam distribution, because that purifies the heart to the point where eventually they can hear the instructions of Krishna. So the intimacies and intricacies of Krishna consciousness is a topic to be shared amongst dedicated souls. The people in general who are not free of envy, who give philosophy, knowledge, not the body. And develop your spiritual essence. And then they take that up and they develop the qualities of humility, devotion, only you share more and more the treasure of our hearts in the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. Okay? Anything else? Thank you very much. My glory is to Srila Prabhupada.
It's funny because, like, when we're talking about the story of the guest, and because you were talking about gift before that, it was like guest and gift, like the gift of humility and the gift of devotional things. It's the same like guest. Because
they're intimately related.
Yeah.